week before our break was Tisha B'Av. We're still here, not in the Beit HaMikdash, but we'll deal with it.
Bruce just took away my entire class. Post Tisha B'Av, not in the Beis HaMikdash yet. And that's exactly what I wanted to ask this morning. We went through 3 weeks plus a day this year of mourning for the various tragedies that emanated from the tragedy of the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed, the three other things written in the Gemara that happened on Tisha B'Av, plus many other events throughout the generations. So we started with minor mourning from the 3 weeks, namely no haircuts, perhaps no shaving, not going to happy occasions, perhaps no music. We uplifted it during the 9 days too. Not wearing laundered clothing, not doing laundry. And then finally, the climax was, of course, Tisha B'Av, which this year was unique, because we had Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, which according to some poskim have certain rules and regulations in terms of mourning even on Shabbos. And then the actual Tisha B'Av, quote-unquote, was on Sunday, Yud B'Av, the 10th of Av, which incidentally is the day that the majority of the temple was burnt. The Gemara says in Tainis that on the night, not the night, but the evening of Tisha B'Av, they lit the flame in the Beis HaMikdash towards Mincha time, and it lit for 24 hours till the 10th of Av in the afternoon. So we actually, this year, mourned literally on the anniversary of the destroying of the Beis HaMikdash per se. In other words, the majority of our Tisha B'Av mourning was during the time that the temple was actually destroyed. And then after going through 3 weeks of building up towards this climax of mourning of Tisha B'Av, Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying, we start out with the Avelus of Yud Bet Chodesh, which is reminiscent of what we do during the 3 weeks, the 12 months that one is mourning for a father or a mother. We uplifted it to the mourning of Shloshim, of the 30 days, which was ultimately the 9 days. And finally, Tisha B'Av, where the Gemara says explicitly, everything that an Avel is not allowed to do, one's not allowed to do on Tisha B'Av. And on Tisha B'Av, per se, we even had a shtickle, a little bit of the highest form of mourning, because the highest form of mourning is the first day of mourning, where the Gemara says that you shouldn't wear tefillin. It's a machlokas, but in general, many say that on the day that's the burial, which is also the first day of mourning, you don't wear tefillin, which we didn't do in the morning of Tisha B'Av. So if you think about it, we went through a very harsh time. That's it. Like, zbing. Motzei Tisha B'Av this year was Sunday night, which is Yud B'Av. Finished! Done! Okay! Hop in the shower, take a shave, a haircut, off to the vacation. Gone! Now eating, I can understand. Eating is not one of the prohibitions of a mourner. Tisha B'Av has a dual character, which is not the topic now, of being both a fast day and a day of mourning. I'm talking about the mourning aspect. So eat, eat. No one says you can't eat. And yes, there's a little bit of a shtickle left that on the night of after Tisha B'Av, we didn't have basar v'yayin. We still didn't have meat and wine. But quite frankly, done! Finished! All right! It was a sad day, it was hard, but then that's it! Monday morning, shaved, showered, fresh clothing, back to life, no problem. What happened over here? What usually happens with a mourner? The exact opposite. Right. First he's in Shiva. Then gradually we take away the prohibitions of Shiva, and he goes into Shloshim, which still has prohibitions. Then if it's a mother and father, it's an entire year of Yud Bet Chodesh, of 12 months. So he finishes his Shloshim, he has 11 months left, and then, and only then, does he go back to life. We, Tisha B'Av, get to the climax, done! All finished! Back to life! Where are you going this weekend? Where are you going for vacation? Kol is over. Back to life. It's like on Tisha B'Av itself, we're sitting there in the afternoon, and we're already planning that tomorrow we'll be on vacation, and tomorrow we'll be back to life. I mean, if indeed we take halacha seriously, and we understand that this was not just not to shave, sit on the floor, say the words, go through the motions, but it was an emotional experience of mourning for something that's missing in our life, how come it just finished? Like a wash. Finished. Done.
Do we have the same attitude post-Yom Kippur?
No. Yom Kippur is not a day of mourning. No, Yom Kippur is a day of tshuva. Absolutely not. First and foremost, Yom Kippur is after a period of time, just like this, in which you're building up towards it. But once you come to Yom Kippur and you went through the proper Yom Kippur, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises you that indeed you're forgiven. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu even says to you that I'm promising forgiveness to the Jewish people. It's a pasuk in Chumash. Ki bayom hazeh yichaper alichem, letaher etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru. So Baruch Hashem, we have a promise. As long as we are genuine, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises He'll forgive us. So after Yom Kippur, not only can we be happy, but we can be happy for two other reasons. First and foremost, we were like angels for an entire day. That's quite an achievement. I mean, not eating, not drinking, davening the majority of the day. And secondly, it's a beautiful medrash, quoting the pasuk in Kohelet, Lech echol besimcha et lachmecha, ushtei b'yein tov et yinecha, ki kfar ratzai elokim et ma'asecha. Go eat and go drink, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu found your actions worthy. And the Medrash says that's Motzei Yom Kippur. And indeed, Motzei Yom Kippur is a big, big yomtiv, if you think about it. First of all, Yom Kippur itself is a yomtiv. It has a din of a yomtiv. If you're sitting Shiva before Yom Kippur, we paskin that Yom Kippur cancels your Shiva. It's not a day of mourning. It's a day of introspection and fasting. And not every fast day is a day of mourning.
If you had to eat, would you make some kind of kiddush?
That's a good question. The answer is no, because they were probably never metakin kiddush on a day of a fast day. So there was never a takana to make kiddush on Yom Kippur. There is a shtikul shaila if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos and you have to eat. Then there's a shaila, a big machlokas achronim, do you make kiddush for Shabbos? Because they did make a takana of Shabbos. But gentlemen, Yom Kippur is not at all a day of mourning. Here we're going through a terrible emotional experience, and I mean awful of the awful, nationally. We're mamish like Avelim on Tisha B'Av, and then finish. Like it mamish stopped this year. Now some years you have until Yud B'Av. The halacha is that we continue the 9 days for another half a day. In other words, 12 more hours if you think about it. Tisha B'Av ends at 8, 9 o'clock. The next day by Chatzos it's finished. But it's still very fast. And this year it's ultra, ultra fast. Fast was over. All day, terrible, awful. Shave, shower, laundry, the works, gone. What's the story? What is the halacha trying to tell us? If halacha is indeed existential, it actually takes life seriously. It doesn't just tell you do this or do that, but rather wants you to go through an emotional experience, not just a physical one. Though we have to do everything the halacha says, even if we don't feel it. Quite frankly, we're supposed to feel it, and we've dealt with that in the past. What are we supposed to learn from the fact that it just ends? Finished. Done.
Could you say that in any mourning period, this being an example, that when it's over, it is over, and you have to move on with life accordingly?
It's true.
But take the message with you.
You're absolutely right. That in a regular mourning, this ha'iser, actually, brought in the books, brought in Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to over-mourn for someone. But that's not true regarding the Beis HaMikdash. The Ramban wrote a beautiful essay called Torat HaAdam about Hilchos Avelus, where the most of it is about the regular Avelus, the ad hoc Avelus for a mother or a father and all the rest of the relatives. And at the end, he has a little bit about Avelut Yeshana, this mourning we have every single year. And then he talks about that, and he says that, indeed, there's no statutes of limitations when it comes to mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. And if you think about it,
the wall that's unfinished,
that's perhaps one answer to our question. The truth is, we never stop mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. It stares you in the face every day, 3 times a day. What am I speaking about? Correct. We always end the Shmon Esrei with the Hiratzal Milfanecha, Hashem Elokeinu, Elokeinu Shibana Beis HaMikdash B'mheira V'yameinu. So 3 times a day it stares you in the face. Now even if you don't say the Hiratzal for some reason or another, in the Siddur there's a beautiful few good pages called Korbanos. As far as I know, it's not optional. As far as I know, it's mandatory. As far as I know, at least parts of it, the Shulchan Aruch says it's mandatory. Other parts he says, V'tov Lomar. But it's in the Siddur, and definitely, for example, the Korban Tumid should be said every day. And indeed, every day, the first thing you do in the morning is, in the Siddur, after Birkas HaShachar, is the Korbanos. And indeed, if you think about it, in the first Siman in Shulchan Aruch, I mean, Judaism 101 starting at 1. Okay? Code of Jewish Law 1, Chapter 1, the Ramos says that every morning, your heart should be doeg, should be worried that there's no Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah Berurah is quick to point out there. That means that when you bench, after you eat a hearty meal, you say Al Naharos Bavel during the week, before benching, and on Shabbos, you say Shir HaMalos B'Shuv Hashem Et Shiva Tzion, which we all sing, but if you think about it, it's talking about a time in the future where we'll all be back here in Zion and everything will be great. So maybe the first answer is it never ends. Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying that the tune we use for Elit Zion, which is the last kina of Ashkenazim that we usually say on Tisha B'Av, the tune is exactly the same tune that we use on Yontif when we say the words B'nei Beikha Kevatchila Elit Zion Ve'areha. It's the same tune. So we never stop mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. True, the external forms of mourning, shaving, etc., stop. But we're never stopping to mourn for it. It's there staring us in the face everywhere. 3 times a day after Shmon Esrei. There are korbanos that we only say and don't bring that's in the Siddur at least in the morning. The fact that every Musaf we talk about our fact that there's no Beis HaMikdash. So every Shabbos and Yontif, these happy occasions, it stares you literally in the face.
I'm not sure that all these laws have actually created a real feeling of mourning for something that we never experienced. And maybe that's the issue. As opposed to, let's say, a parent that you knew. As opposed
well, maybe
to
that's maybe why it's there. Because you never knew it, and because it's what we call, the Gemara already calls, Avilut Yeshana, old mourning, meaning it's not fresh, then we try to invoke the feeling because it's not going to come naturally. We actually stimulate the feeling. And we do everything possible that it stares you in the face every day. No psychologist would suggest that you should go ahead and every single day talk about how terrible it is that this person is not here or that person is not here. And yet, we in our practices talk about the Beis HaMikdash every single day.
Because I go, if we really had a mourning for it,
That's it.
We would
do something
about it that we can.
Do something about it is exactly what I think we should do something about. But I just want to say, in parentheses, doing something about it doesn't mean build a building and they will come. Doing something about it is to look, why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Have we fixed those averos? It's not just throw away the mosque, bring a Beis HaMikdash, bring korbanos, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. And I'll just throw out one challenge that I don't know the answer to. If I nominate you to bring my korban, you're going to be the kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. I'm sure there's going to be 5 Jews saying you're not religious enough for me. I don't trust you. What nusach are you davening when you do it? So quite frankly, we have a long way to go to get to that.
Did that go on?
Did that go on when? I'm talking about today. I don't know. I wasn't there. Forget about the tzedukah. The tzedukah, I'm saying within the religious community, we're not there yet. Close the parentheses. The first answer is, why is it zbeing finished? Because it's never finished. It's always going on. Every Musaf of Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos and Yontif, 3 times a day, the Korbanos every day. When we bench, you mentioned leaving a part of your wall unfinished, leaving, placing something at the table missing. All year we have practices to remember the Korban Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, it never ends. But I want to give a different answer in a minute. Yeah.
I just think that when Zechariah and Haggai motivated the people to build what they didn't want to either of them for all kinds of reasons, the idea was the building itself would be a uniting factor.
And it wasn't.
Well, for some period of time, they united on the project.
It wasn't. Quite frankly, Jews even made Aliyah and went back to Babel. Many Jews didn't come to Eretz Yisrael. We have many, many sources. We all know what Ezra and Nehemiah went through. In the second Beis HaMikdash, this was a far cry from the first. The 5 special things that were missing there, Urim Vetumim, Aron, etc. It didn't.
It didn't work.
Didn't work. So that exactly proves my point. If you will build it, they will come. I'm not so sure it's true, and I have a proof. The second Beis HaMikdash was built, and they didn't come. They didn't. Okay, you're building a Beis HaMikdash. We're okay over here. Eile barechev, eile basusim, anachnu b'shem Hashem elokeinu naskir. There's Israel, there's chutzler. We're all fine. Everyone has their kehillah. But I want to give a second answer. And that's maybe the opposite of my first answer. My first answer was that we never stop mourning for it. My second answer is a little different. And my second answer has to do, in my opinion, with something that we overlook when it comes to Tisha B'Av. We overlook when it comes to our year. And that is that nobody lives with the recognition that perhaps one day Tisha B'Av will not be a day of mourning. And that 3 weeks will not be a time of mourning, but perhaps a time of Chol HaMoed. Because the Navi Zechariah that you mentioned, Bruce, says explicitly, in a prophecy from God, Tzoma Revi'i v'Tzoma Chamishi, v'Tzoma Shvi'i v'Tzoma Asiri, Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av, Gimel B'Tishrei, which of course is Tzom Gedalia and Asara B'Teves, Yiyu Levet Yisrael will be for the house of Israel, L'Sason, U'L'Simcha, U'L'Moadim Tovim. When do we use the word Sason, Simcha, Moed? Sason, Simcha, Moed. When do we invoke those three terms? Sason and Simcha at a wedding, but not Moed. Sason, Simcha, Moed. When is that combination used? Mosaf only? Be precise. Every single Amida, Batiten Lanu Hashem Elokeinu Be'ava, Mo'adim Lesimcha, word Moed, word Simcha, Chagim Uzmanim Lesason. How do we end the Amida of Yontiv? Ve'asiyenu Hashem Elokeinu et Birkat Mo'adecha, there is the word Moed again, Lechayim Uleshalom, Lesimcha Ulesason. And we end the bracha, Ve'hanchileinu Hashem Elokeinu, Besimcha uvesason moade kolchecha. So the combination of sason, simcha, moed is only used when, not on Rosh Chodesh, not on Chanukah, but
on the
Chagim, on the full-fledged holidays. So if Navi Zechariah is using those terms, then obviously what he's trying to tell us is that there's going to be four more Yom Tivs on our calendar. Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av, Gimel B'Tishrei, and Asara B'Teves. And therefore, on Tisha B'Av, we had a shtickel, a little bit of a taste, that this day will turn into a yontiv. What's the taste that we get? A strange taste. We're sitting on the floor, we're mourning, we haven't taken a proper shower in a few days, and what don't we say? Tachanun. Why don't we say Tachanun? The Shulchan Aruch tells you why. Because it should be there. It should be Slichos and Tachanun. It should be a terrible day. It is a terrible day. Why don't we say Tachanun? What's the reason?
Potentially tomorrow.
Mishum de'ikre moed. It is called a moed. It says in Eicha, Kara alai moed, lishbor bachurai. It's called a moed to hurt us. But in the future, it will be a moed. A proper moed. With Sason and Simcha. And therefore, since this day will eventually turn into a happy day, it's not the regular mourning. Because the regular mourning is a mourning for someone that existed and no longer exists, lo aleinu, in this world. Chiyas HaMeitim, perhaps. In the future, he will come back. Not perhaps, he will. But who knows when Chiyas HaMeitim will happen, exactly. After Mashiach, when during the redemptive process is a good question. But Tisha B'Av will turn into a Moed. And I'll just give you an example that maybe makes it tangible for you. This is my own little Chiddush this year. But I asked at the Shabbos table on Tisha B'Av. It's the only Tisha B'Av that we ate, because it came out on Shabbos. So as we're eating, I said, how come we can't have Tisha B'Av on Shabbos? So my kid says, you have to eat on Shabbos. I said, well, eating on Shabbos, per se, is probably not a d'oraisa. The Oraisa, you have to keep a day of Shabbos by not doing melacha. Well, don'ts we're good with. Then you have dues, midoraisa, kiddush, which according to most poskim, you can just say, you don't have to say over a cup of wine.
Oneg
is derabanan. It's written in the Navi Yeshayahu. True, it's a derabanan, but it's written in the Navi. Well, so is Tisha B'Av, Tzom, Hachamishi. So how come the Oneg overrides the Tisha B'Av? So the Gemara says, when Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, you push it off. So my question was, why? Let's have a Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, albeit it will be a little different. But we will fulfill all the biblical commandments of Shabbos, all the rabbinic restrictions of Shabbos. But when it comes to the rabbinic obligations, well, you have an obligation rabbinic of Oneg, let's say, or making Kiddush over a cup of wine. And then you have a rabbinic restriction of not eating and drinking. So they're equal. Like, so how come Tisha B'Av is pushed off?
Like the 10th of Tevet, I think we would fast on Shabbat.
Maybe. That's an Abu Draham, a very strange one. Never comes out, so we didn't have to deal with it. But that's one opinion. The Rambam does not bring that in Hilchos Hilchos Tainis Perakeh, that if the Asara B'Tevis would come out on Shabbos, we would fast that day. That's a big, big, big Chiddush, because it's learned out from a Pasuk. That's a gzeirah shavah, hayom hazeh, ve'etzem hayom hazeh, from Yom Kippur to a Navi. Gzeirah shavah usually is within the Torah, not from a Navi to the Torah. In any case, going back to this story, Tisha B'Av is equal to Oneg Shabbos. So you have a rabbinic obligation to enjoy Shabbos, and you have a rabbinic obligation to fast and mourn. So how come this overrides this? I told my kids that I think halachically the answer is based on another idea we have, which is the following idea. Let's say you have a kid under bar mitzvah. According to Rashi against Tosfos, or Tosfos against Rashi, I always get confused. It's not that his father has to educate him to do mitzvos, but he's obligated in the mitzvah midirabbanan until he's 13. From 13 onwards, midoraisa. So that means when he does Kriyat Shema, it's not that his father has to teach him to do Kriyat Shema, but he has to do a bona fide Kriyat Shema, albeit his obligation is midirabbanan, and your obligation, Bruce, is midoraisa. Understand? Therefore, the Gemara, the poskim, asks, how come a kid can't say Kiddush for you on a Friday night? You're obligated to say Kiddush midirabbanan over a cup of wine. He's obligated in mitzvos midirabbanan himself, in a bona fide Kiddush. So why can't he say Kiddush for you? How come we say until your bar mitzvah you can't? So the Rishonim bring a very interesting idea, and that is, there's a difference between a trei derabbanan versus a chad derabbanan. Trei derabbanan means two derabbanans. If you have to say Kiddush Friday night, it's because the rabbis told you so. When a kid says Kiddush Friday night, it's a double derabbanan. He's only obligated to listen to the rabbis, mi derabbanan, rabbinically, and the actual mitzvah he's doing is rabbinic. So he's twice removed versus once removed, so to speak. And therefore he cannot fulfill the obligation to you, for you. I wanted to suggest that's exactly Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. Tisha B'Av is not a derabbanan. It's a week derabbanan, W-E-A-K. Why is it a week derabbanan? Because one day it will turn into a holiday. It's not on the calendar to stay, like Yom Kippur, and therefore we fast on Shabbos. It's on the calendar to be removed. And therefore, even though it's there right now, it's weak, W-E-A-K. And therefore, because it's weak, it does not override the obligations rabbinically of Shabbos, because the Shabbos rabbinic obligations will always be there. Thus, why is it that we finish Tisha B'Av and done? Because Tisha B'Av is not a strong mourning. Right now it's on the calendar. We have to do it properly. But one day it will change. And on Tisha B'Av itself, it stares you in the face. When you don't say Tachanun, Mishum de Ikre Moed, it's called a Moed. It's like the craziest thing in the world. It's like you're bringing a Korban in the Beis HaMikdash and you're fasting on Tisha B'Av. Maybe such a thing happened during the second Beis HaMikdash. We don't know. Big Machlokas Rishonim. But quite frankly, why is it that Tisha B'Av finishes and done? Because we believe one day it's going to change. Therefore, it's not a strong mourning. It's a weak mourning. True, we're into it when it's there, when it's necessary. And here comes the charge and the challenge for the summer. Do we live that way? Do you live in a way in which you firmly believe that perhaps next year, Tisha B'Av will not be a fast day, but will be a yontif, which means you'll have to take off from work, which means you'll have to cook in honor of it, which means many different things? Or do you say it, like you say, if I win the lottery, I'll give a donation? Yeah, you know, quite frankly, if I win the lottery, I'll give a donation, no problem. But I don't firmly go to sleep at night thinking I'm going to win the lottery. And therefore, we all know that your words are cheap.
That's why.
Or do you go ahead and say, in a very authentic way, that this will change? And that's the charge I give everyone for the summer. I asked the question, how comes Tisha B'Av finishes and there's no gradual period to go back to life? And I gave two answers. The first one was that we always mourn for the Beis HaMikdash. And the second one is because Tisha B'Av is going to change into a holiday. In my opinion, they're not two answers, but rather one. Why do we constantly mourn for the Beis HaMikdash? Because we constantly know it's going to change one day. That one day, the Musaf is going to change. One day the Siddur is going to change. As a matter of fact, it's all going to change. But if you don't live that way, then my question from the beginning of class is a better question than the answers. If you live in a way in which you say, everything's going to basically stay the same, then you have a strong question. I'll give you one example. A person recently told me that they're building a new house, and they want to have what's called a permanent sukkah. They hate building a sukkah every year. They get splinters in their hands. They don't know how to get the walls upright. So what they want to do is make a permanent sukkah, in which all they have to do is take off the roof, put on the schach, and there you go. And they wanted to go a step further and actually have it in their dining room. And they were asking how to do it. Now, as I was there, and of course, there's halachic issues involved, I asked them, and what happens if there's a Beis HaMikdash tomorrow? You won't be here. You'll be obligated in going to Yerushalayim, and you'll have to take a sukkah with you. So the splinters and the screws and everything will come back. And the answer I got was something along the lines of, yeah, sure. Like, big deal. Like, alright, if it happens, it happens. We win the lottery, we'll do this. Alright, you know, my car breaks down, I walk. But in general, I don't believe my car is going to break down tomorrow. If we don't believe that things are going to change, then you have a very big question. And maybe your mourning has to continue past Tisha B'Av. But if you firmly believe that things will change, then you understand the answer to the question. And here I give the charge for the summer. The only way to properly mourn for the Beis HaMikdash on the one hand, and to properly think that it's going to change, is to put yourself in the Beis HaMikdash. What do I mean, put yourself? Put yourself in the other person's shoes. Say to yourself, if I today have to start getting ready to go to Yerushalayim for Sukkos, and we're now Motzei Shemitah, so there'll be a Hakel, and there'll be a Sukkos, what do I do? Which Arab do I buy my korbanos from? What sukkah do I take with me that's going to be self-standing, because we're not going to have our strong walls of the house? Will I come back in the middle, or will I stay there? Shmini Atzeret, I still have to be there, yes, no. And that's the only way, the only way, that we will be able to continue to live properly throughout the year, if you put yourself in those shoes. But if you talk about Beis HaMikdash like you talk about Fairyland, if you talk about Beis HaMikdash like you talk about Disneyland, if you talk about Beis HaMikdash like you talk about all the rest of the fairy tales, then quite frankly, my question is stronger than my answer. Because you're not putting yourself there. Yeah, Beis HaMikdash, we all know, that's the way the rabbi finishes his speeches, that's the way that ultimately we always talk, we always say the word Beis HaMikdash, it's like a Jewish hello, and that's it. Doesn't mean a thing to me. I'm going to build my strong house and whatnot. I believe we have to live with the recognition and the constant awareness that if the Beis HaMikdash is built and rebuilt, what do I do? How is my Pesach Seder going to look? How is my Shavuos going to look? How is my Sukkos going to look? Will I be there Yom Kippur, or will I choose to stay home because there's no obligation? These are questions that have to be asked at the Shabbos table all year. Not just once a year on Tisha B'Av we say, oh, we have no Beis HaMikdash. Because if it's not part of your life all year, then what are you mourning for on Tisha B'Av? If it's not part of your calendar all year, then what's so sad? We have to ultimately, especially when we get to the parshas of Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudeh, Vayikra, Tzav, that talk about the Mishkan, say if we are going to be there, what are we, our family, four, five, six kids, grandchildren, going to do? Korban Pesach, who are we going to be in a group with? Who's my friends who are going to be with me? How is my Seder going to look? I have to go through it fast because you can only eat the Korban Pesach on the bottom floor of Yerushalayim, not the top floor. So therefore, I've got to go through it fast so someone else, another family, can come in. How is my Seder going to look? It's going to be totally different. If we don't start talking about it, if it's not part of our conversation, And unfortunately, the question I asked at the better beginning of this year remains a very strong question. But if you do talk about it, if you firmly believe that it will turn into a moed and you make it part of your agenda, then you understand why a second after Tisha B'Av, we finished mourning.